episode 36, Reggae. Recently, we have had a couple of people try out our old school Japanese martial art, Takamuraha Shindo Yoshinryu. For us, this is rare. We don't strongly advertise, as my sensei prefers that people search us out. We are known in the local community as those guys who swing swords around on weeknights, especially in the darker months where the dojo lights highlight our presence in the neighbourhood. We train out of a karate dojo, so families and students of karate classes sometimes see us as they pass through as well. Other than their website, that's it for advertising. So when people turn up to train, they have usually done a little bit of research on what we are all about. Even then, sensei is straight up with them. He tells them that our training is relentless, but issues no belts, and new people start with basic movements they must repeat over and over again. We prefer people who have at least attained a black belt in another martial art, but we make exceptions based on character and commitment. Two of the new folk are father and son. They are continuing to train despite the grind. They have been with us for a few weeks, and it's nice they have new bodies on the mat. However, as a senior student of the dojo, I have a job to do, to set their reggae right. Alessandra, who is an author I'm a big fan of, says this: martial arts are a laboratory for real life, not real life in themselves. Through martial arts practice, we learn how to respond to force, how to deal with less than perfect training partners, and how to react to things that we are taught that don't seem to make sense. We are expected to bow to each other, to our teachers, and to such things as a photograph of a teacher, a scroll with some words, or the name of a deity, even though we don't do that in real life. End quote. For people new to the Japanese martial arts, this can be weird. Bowing, especially to pictures of dead people and scrolls, is strange to a Westerner. In TSYR, this is even stranger, as more archaic practices must be adhered to that come from a time when Japan was a feudal society. When I started Aikido, I understood that bowing had to do with respect, and when bowing to another person, it was explained to me that it was like a handshake. Both parties had made an agreement of respect towards one another. When we bow, we are saying, "I respect you and I will look after you as we train." I once read that it is important to acknowledge past teachers and the knowledge they have given you. Even if you have gone separate ways, you are the martial artist you are now because of your past teachers and their teachers before them. In Budo, one way past teachers are acknowledged is by having their picture on the shomen, or the front wall or place of respect. The students bow towards the shomen before and after training. In this way, the past teachers continue to be remembered for their contribution to the martial art. This is certainly the case in Aikido, Judo, and Karate Dojo I have visited or trained in. Bowing is based on the Shinto belief system. In Japan, people can be found bowing at shrines to show respect to the kami, which are the spiritual gods, that reside there. Years ago, while I was training in my Aikido dojo, we had a woman who really enjoyed training with us. She felt empowered and was learning quickly. Then one day, she walked in and said to my sensei that she had to stop training because her husband discovered she was bowing to a picture of Morihei Ueshiba, who's the founder of the art. And as they were Christian, this had to stop. Christians don't bow to false idols. Unfortunately, we lost a good student that day due to cultural differences. This etiquette, or correctness, is called reigi in Japanese. A large part of reigi is the bow, but it's not everything. There is more to it. In TSYR, when you become a deshi, or student, you take on the responsibility of representing the martial school. You must behave in accordance to the school rules and do not put the school in disrepute. Reigi helps determine social hierarchy in a dojo. There is a strict vertical authority with the headmaster of the school at the top. Juniors should be respectful of seniors, and seniors should treat juniors in a manner consistent with the best interests of the kai. This means being considerate and nurturing when needed, or telling them the rules when they don't know them or break them. The social climate in a koryu dojo is a subtle one. No one is barking orders and counting out repetitions. Students watch their teacher and their seniors carefully, watching for cues on how to behave. This leads to a natural situational awareness. Students will go about doing small chores if they need to be done, before and after training. They look for what needs to be done, they don't get told what to do, it is expected that they will watch and learn. I had a junior student take a mop bucket out of my hands the other day and said, "I'll get that." He removed one chore from me. He was showing his willingness to contribute. I didn't ask him to take the bucket from me. In fact, I was quite happy to do the chore. His actions spoke volumes about his character, though. This is important. The students who sit about while others look to the cleanliness of the dojo won't last long with us. Takamura Sensei had this to say on Regi. Acceptance or rejection of proper dojo etiquette can expose a student's dedication or shortcomings to a sensei. The student who refuses to embrace Regi is not suitable for continued training because he ultimately views his own opinions and desires as superior to the aims of the Ryu. End quote. So let me take you back to talking about the father and son who have joined us. The son, by the way, is about 20, so they are both adults. I noticed that the son came to the dojo last time without wearing shoes. He walked in off the street in bare feet. For us, that is a problem. This means he is walking the outside filth onto our mats. Up until this point, both father and son have been respectful in everything they have done. The father, in particular, has had experience in another martial art and often bows in acknowledgement of a comment or when greeting us. The son knows to bow onto and off the mat. It wasn't until they were leaving that I also noticed the father walking barefoot to his car. As a senior student of the dojo, I had to put this right. So I called the father over and told him that I noticed he was not wearing footwear outside. He said, "Oh, they are in the car." I then explained to him the importance of keeping one's feet clean until entering the dojo space. He accepted it and went on his way. If I was not to bring this up, then I would have been at fault, not the father and son. They may not have known any better, but I did and had to address it. This aspect of Budo, I believe, can separate traditional martial arts from the more competitive versions out there. Consider karate, aikido, and judo for a moment. Then compare mixed martial arts or boxing gyms. Obviously, karate and judo have a competitive element to them as well, but Regi is still practiced in these dojos. Some people might say the traditional martial arts allow an individual to develop a sense of humility due to the values of respect that are involved in practice. Whereas the athletes of MMA and boxing, although very proficient physically, may not develop as much respect for others. In fact, the intense competition of MMA and boxing may develop people with very large egos. To be the very best, you have to think you are the very best, don't you? Now, not every boxing gym is the same, and the personality of the coach accounts for a lot, I'm sure. Also, there is an honesty to boxing, BJJ, and MMA that you don't find in the more traditional martial arts. When you get beaten, you get beaten. It's obvious. This in itself can be humbling. The type of pressure testing that occurs in these types of places have value. However, I still question the quality or character of a person these places might create. I'd also say that the environment of the traditional dojo can be both bad and good. I have seen and heard of examples in the traditional dojo where Regi is used to establish power by either an amoral teacher or senior students. Often passive aggression can be rife in some of these dojo. This is Regi gone bad. It is tainted. Also, students come to the dojo with their own values established by the upbringing. Some students can learn from technically sound, bad people without being corrupted. Of course, the reverse can occur. A teacher of high morals can attempt to teach and perhaps influence a student with a bad background or character, but might just end up giving that person more tools to cause harm with. When all is said and done, Regi requires sincerity. Hollow bows and over-the-top praise for your senpai or sensei looks and sounds nice, but is merely acting. Truly respectful students show respect in subtle ways. Sure, they follow the rituals, but they are done with intent. They will quietly carry out duties no one else can be bothered with. They will see that the dojo stays clean. They will help a junior when they are struggling and listen carefully to the advice given to them by their seniors. A student who is sincere in their Regi is open to what is being taught to them and may in time be transformed by their practice. A student that does reggae mere lip service will not change their ways. So how does reggae fit into a warrior mindset? Is etiquette or manners needed for a warrior mindset? I would argue that it is. Let's start with a pragmatic answer. Martial artists study the use of force or violence on others. In some cases, weapons are involved. Now, anyone who has used or been around firearms knows the importance of muzzle discipline. You never point the nasty end of a gun at someone unless you mean to. The consequences of such an action are just too high. This is the same with sword use. There are ways to carry a sword, ways to pass a sword to another person, and ways to store a sword in the dojo. You never point a sword at someone unless you mean to. Doing things the right way in a training space keeps your fellow training partners safe. This mentality can be applied to a knife, a stick, or any other object that could be considered a weapon in the training space. In fact, empty hand training should require that same feeling of safety. You want to be able to reuse your training partners from session to session, week to week. You don't want to intentionally hurt them. There are also social reasons for the correct way of doing things. Many of the practices around etiquette come from a time when poor manners led to dire consequences. The strict social structure of the Edo period of Japan is one example. Your life could be forfeit if you stepped out of line. The story of the 47 Ronin is a great example of this. I have also spoken about the discipline of Genghis Khan's Mongol army in a past episode. Falling asleep at your post was punishable by death. In cultures where the consequences were high for showing bad manners, you simply learned to do the right thing. So for many martial arts, these rules have come down in a more diluted form to us now. If you believe you follow a warrior's mindset, then you too should follow some personal rules. I will call this personal integrity. Are you someone who keeps his or her word? Do you follow through on tasks? Or do you tell people what they want to hear to get them off your back? The reality is that manners and etiquette came about so everyone knew the rules and could get along without insult. In this day and age, at least in most Western countries, society is gentler. However, this means the consequences for one's actions are less severe. It appears manners are less important. I could give you countless examples of young people I have taught or neighbours' children who have grown up not being held accountable for their actions. One of two things occurs. They either become disrespectful people who do not own any of their actions, or they become self-entitled and think the world owes them everything because they have never been told no. In both cases, this sort of person is going to struggle as an adult. The first will get in trouble with the law, and the second will struggle with any kind of adversity in their lives and be keeping counsellors and psychologists in a job. Not saying that seeing such a professional is a problem in and of itself, but the frequency these young people will see them will be excessive. For fear of sounding like that old man, simple rules like respecting your elders and using please and thank you still go a long way in the world. Anyone who has travelled to other countries understands this. If you learn the equivalent of please or thank you in a foreign country, you put people at ease and on side with you from the very beginning, even if the rest of your language is quite poor. So if you think you are a warrior, if you think you are put on this planet to protect others and keep them safe, don't forget your manners. Thanks for listening today. You can contact me on Instagram at mushishugyopodcast or by email at mushishugyopodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you can, please check out my Patreon account. It's www.patreon.com/M Mushishugyo Podcast. Right, time for the quote of the episode. This one is a Japanese phrase, so forgive me if I butcher the pronunciation. It says this: Raiba ni sukimono wa re ni sukuru. This is translated as either the best warriors have the best manners, or a skilled swordsman has superior manners.